Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Our guest today, Jess Wendell. Jess, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate your time. And just let us know where you're calling in from, first of all, and what you do for a living with Maven Consulting.
Yeah, I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Awesome.
Moved back just recently, so getting settled. And yeah, I have a full funnel PR firm for emerging and established CPG brands with Maven Consulting.
Awesome. Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about your background. I mean, what got you into the consulting side, and when did you actually start that business as well?
Yeah. So Maven is about 3.5 years old now. And I started on the agency side, majored in PR, did the traditional PR agency route for about 7 years, and then went in-house for brand Perfect Bar. It's the original refrigerated protein bar here in Southern California. And was there for 5 years during their really high growth phase right before selling to Mondelez. And then I stayed 1 year post-acquisition to Mondelez before starting Maven in summer of 2020.
So you kind of had that experience, like working with obviously growing a brand and seeing what it takes and all the like hurdles that are there along the way. And then you just found some ways that you obviously helped this brand to grow. Thought you could kind of share that out there with other brands. And is that kind of why you started the agency?
Yeah, I awesome. Swore I yeah. would never work for an agency again, or much less have one. But after being inside of a brand and seeing just how valuable PR can be when it's treated cross-functionally with other areas of the business, and when you really understand the other areas of the business, how much more impactful it could be. And I was witnessing PR be so siloed from the overall brand initiatives. And so I really set out to try and between PR and marketing and speak marketing language, but with a PR lens. And so being able to come from inside of a brand, but also have the agency understanding is really what was rooted in starting Maven and helping brands navigate PR, because for some reason it is still extremely cryptic and coveted. And I just don't think it needs to be. It's an art, not a science. Marketing is much more of a science. So it's a little bit harder to teach, but I would say 50% of my time is spent educating and really teaching brands how to think differently about their efforts that can be seen as more, you know, PR reputation building for them.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I mean, for a lot of entrepreneurs listen to the podcast, as most of our listener base. So for somebody who maybe is like, you're trying to do everything themselves, maybe like they're the CEO wearing every hat for their business. What would you kind of say is like the biggest kind of differentiator? Cause I feel like most people are very like marketing, thought driven when they think about like the public image of their brand. What would you say is the biggest like differentiator between what like you traditionally think of as marketing in your mind and what actually falls in the PR category that should maybe be treated differently than like maybe something on the marketing front?
I love that question so much, because the line is so blurred. And 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't. It was very clear what fell in under the marketing camp and what fell under the PR camp. The most simple way that I can explain it is that marketing is your end consumer or your target audience hearing directly from the horse's mouth to their ears. You are telling them what you want them to hear, why your product is the best, why they should buy it, what benefits it'll do for them. While it achieves conveying that information, it doesn't hit as hard or effectively as them hearing it from someone else, a trusted resource, someone that they already respect and know, saying the exact same thing that you're trying to tell them, but they're hearing it through an endorsement versus straight from you. So PR is really, how do you get other people to say exactly what you want your end consumer to hear about your brand? It takes that indirect relationship. And that's where media, influencers, podcasts come in, that you have to, that endorsement is required. I need the buy-in from you to tell my client's story. And then your audience hears it from you because you endorsed it, not the client buying an ad on your podcast and saying, we have the best, most effective supplement on the market. They're hearing it, you saying, I take this supplement every day. I love it. It makes me feel this. Hits so much stronger.
So you're basically saying it's a very simple sense that, like, you know, direct marketing is messaging put out from the brand to consumers, and any type, and PR in a sense is really any messaging that you're putting through any other medium that isn't yourself as a business or any like entity that the business owns, whether it's their social media channels or their YouTube or whatever.
Yeah, it's, and again, it's really blurred because you could say influencer marketing, for example, is a mix between shared, paid, and owned media. Mm-hmm. It's oftentimes paid for, but why influencer marketing is still so valuable is because there is that endorsement that is still required. Most influencers will not share something that they don't personally love and endorse. Additionally, there's still a storytelling or a relevancy component to it that is required. Whereas I say, we don't do paid ads on Google, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, because you can plop something up there and there's no integrity. There's no editorial review. There's really whatever you want to show, aside from maybe something that regulatory doesn't work. You can put whatever you want out there. I saw a magazine the other day that had two competing products side by side, full page ads that were probably $50,000 each. And no one checked to say, oh, that brand probably doesn't want to be right next to that brand selling right. the exact same products. But with ads, you can do that. And in fact, you can say, we are the best. We have the best, you know, best donuts in all of California. Nobody is checking that. But from a PR standpoint, we have to remain extremely objective and really lead with the fact and let other people decide how they want to further convey and articulate that story or that message.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, especially in the case of social media. I mean, because, you know, something we talk about on the podcast today is going to show up on my Instagram feed this afternoon. You know what I mean? So when that happens, I feel like that's exactly the same example as like the two things in the magazine, like you talked about. That's like, I speak about pumpkin pie. My whole feed is going to be like 100 brands doing the exact same thing right after each other again and again and again. So I think that's a really interesting way to differentiate that too, where, because you're not constantly flooded with like per se influencers like talking about the same things. Like it might be the people that you like and that you follow that have similar interests, but they may be talking about very different things. Like the straight advertising is definitely more that like flooding of like the same messaging of similar brands. So
yeah.
I think that's a really, that's a really intuitive way to think about it. Yeah.
And exactly what you're saying about, you know, pumpkin season comes and you just get flooded. You can't, I just had a brand today ask me, should we not go all in on back school because it's so saturated? And I said, no, you, from a marketing standpoint, you absolutely should play in that game. Your brand is primed for that. Don't miss out on an opportunity to be relevant during that time frame. However, you need to take it up a notch if you want any sort of PR capability there, because just coming up with a deal or a promo isn't going to get people talking. No one's going to say, can you believe that brand is offering 25% off for back to school, or they're positioning themselves as a good backpack snack? No one is going to start talking about that. What they are going to talk about is a creative partnership or collaboration that you did, and you sold a limited edition product that's perfect for kids' backpacks because they always leave their lunchbox behind. And that, like, it's getting, thinking outside the box of what will get people talking. That's the PR move. That's the viral moments that you're seeing, or what gets, you know, that buzzworthy attention. It requires third parties to help you tell that story versus just, we came up with this cool concept and we're fitting into kind of the editorial calendar that we know exists already.
So you kind of find like the way to like differentiate yourself through more of a PR channel, typically in like a hot season for certain types of products, and then still using more maybe marketing channels to send maybe like a messaging that may like make sense for that time, although it might be saturated, and then turn and use the PR to kind of do like a differentiation from the more common messaging or more maybe a slightly saturated messaging of what you see on the marketing front.
Absolutely. I mean, a great example is it's positioning and it's going all in on that, but it's finding ways to get other people to buy into that positioning. So yeah, it's very theoretical, and it's almost like you need to have a brand to say, here's how this looks for you. So yeah, it's nuanced to the nth degree. It really is, but it is, I love really defining the difference between the two, because I think today that they're so blurred, but there is that really like clear differentiation of somebody else telling your story. Why should they tell your story? Does it excite them? Does it entertain them? Do they want to be seen as someone who's in the know? Or, you know, you get feedback when you share things with people, right? Why do you go to brunch on a Sunday morning and tell people about your favorite new Stanley cup that you have? It's because you love it and you want to be seen as a thought leader or a trendsetter. So how do we make people feel like they're in the know, or that they've come up on something that they can't wait to tell someone else? Mm-hmm. It's a skill, and it's something that I think over time you get better and better at, but it certainly is something that I think it's a different way of thinking for marketers.
No, it certainly is. And I don't think it's something that's talked about enough. I mean, just like in like intra-entrepreneurial circles, I mean, I think most people just think about marketing and everything is just kind of all encompassing, and the strategy behind each piece of marketing is kind of the same. And no, it's something I wish I talked more about. And I just certainly plan to after, like, you know, hearing from your insights. You're very knowledgeable on this. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And I also know that, you know, obviously with these insights that you've learned along the way about, you know, the difference between marketing and PR and how to do each individual thing well, and how to position both of them at the same time, but do different things in them. I know you also have a CPG brand of your own. So I'm curious to learn, you know, a little bit about, you know, how your experience in running the agency and learning things and working for clients kind of helped you in, you know, creating a successful CPG brand as well.
I actually think it's the perfect transition to how PR can come to life, or the way that my mind works in seeing opportunities. So my brand is Drift Sleep. It's mouth tape for when you sleep.
Oh, awesome.
To support nasal breathing and help you wake up feeling more refreshed. So the quick science behind it is that as humans, we're supposed to only eat and talk through our mouths, and we're supposed to breathe through our nose. As we've evolved, our jaws have gotten really lazy. We're chewing softer foods. You know, there's those jaw exercises now, and our mouths fall open when we sleep, causing us to breathe through our mouths while we're sleeping. And if you're sitting here, just sitting here listening, you're not sitting here with your mouth open. We know consciously to close our mouths, but at night, if we're sitting there for 8 hours, we're not getting nitric oxide through our bloodstream, which essentially oxygenates our bloodstream and gives us more energy. So that's what your nose filters air differently than your mouth. I heard about this because I was pulling all-nighters when I first started Maven, and I wasn't sleeping. And I asked a friend of mine, how do I get more efficient sleep? I need 8 hours and 4 hours. What do I need to do? And he asked me if I was a mouth breather. I said, I think so. People have taken photos of me with my mouth open while I'm sleeping. And I thought, how have I not heard about this? This is crazy. Thinking about, you know, what even like these red light masks, this is all coming to light, no pun intended, but weird wellness trend. I thought to myself, you know, this is something that it objectively works. It's not like, oh, I saw a little bit of texture difference on my skin. It's no, you either are or you aren't breathing out of your nose. And so for something so simple, I thought everything that exists on the market today is extremely clinical and really, medically driven. And I thought, I started using it. It changed my life. Feeling a million times better than I ever did before. Just so much more energy. Not like I have to stay in bed for another hour. And for something to make such a difference in my life, I thought, this is going to take off. And this is 3 years ago. My business partner, Lindsay, and I kind of, you know, just did some landscape analysis. And I thought, this, for how much it changed my life and for how unknown it is as something that doesn't require you to consume anything, no melatonin or CBD. It's not expensive. It's not a wearable, you know, Aura ring. This really has some legs from a business standpoint, but even more so from a PR standpoint. I wanted articles that said, I tape my mouth shut for a month and here's what happened. And guess what? We've gotten them. And it's that thinking. I always think in headlines. What do we want the headline to be? It's this one hack literally changed the way I show up for my kids and my family every single day, because now I have more energy to do the things I love. And it's something that costs me less than a dollar a day. Things like that, where it becomes a PR-able conversation, and even explaining it at a dinner party or a networking event, you know, people still don't know, or they say, oh, I've heard of that on TikTok, but I've never seen it. Tell me more about it. When there's an educational opportunity and there's kind of this like, wait, come again? What did you say? That creates the buzz where somebody at a dinner party says, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe this, but I started mouth taping and it makes me feel like a different person in the morning. That is PR right there in the most blatant form. And so I knew that, and I'm not giving myself a ton of credit, but there are very few, you come up with ideas every single day and I'm like, oh, that's a business idea. That's a business idea. This is the only one that I've gone all in on because I saw just how much white space from a PR standpoint there was. And since then, I mean, the market has gotten very crowded, but we were one of the first brands to really make it a beauty, personal brand. So that's kind of, I mean, a good transition of just how I'm thinking about, why is this brand prime for PR? not every brand is primed for PR. If you don't have a lot of explanation or education around your product and it's just really straightforward. I mean, this cup that literally just, I mean, it doesn't even really keep anything cold. It just kind of makes sure that my hand doesn't get cold while I'm drinking it. It's a reusable cup. This is probably not a good brand for PR. It doesn't require a lot of education, information sharing. It's not anything remarkable. It doesn't have any bells or whistles. I would not tell this brand that they should invest in PR.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. And I mean, I can definitely see that. And when did you say you started Drift again?
So we just crossed our 2-year mark.
That makes sense. Yeah. Cause I feel like I've seen on my social media feeds things about, you know, sleeping mouth tape in the past 6 months, maybe a year at the most. So I definitely see what you mean when it's become a little bit crowded. I mean, I won't name any names, but I mean, I've definitely seen them out there. And how are you kind of, I guess from the PR standpoint, it obviously makes sense. And at that time, there certainly was a ton of white space. I don't think it was something that was being talked about, and the benefits are obvious. I use it myself. So like, I know exactly what you're talking about. But how do you, I guess on the marketing side, though, as well.
Yeah.
How do you kind of think about your ideal customer for a product like this that can benefit everybody? Because that's always a challenge, obviously, with brands as well. It's like, you know, a lot of products can be good for every single person on the planet. But if the marketing messaging reflects that, it can always be, you know, it's that old adage of like, you know, if you try to appeal to everybody, you actually appeal to nobody. So how did you kind of grapple with that, those decisions aside from the PR side to the marketing side of who you see as kind of your ideal customer demographic, psychographic, and those types of things?
It's such a good question because, to your point, and I've worked with plenty of brands that have trouble identifying that core consumer, especially when you want to be applicable and available to everyone. You don't want to polarize anyone, and you don't want to exclude potential customers when you're like, revenue is revenue is revenue. Orders are orders are orders. We don't really care who they come from. But to your point, if you're for everyone, you're actually for no one, and nobody can see themselves in your brand. And, you know, I can preach that all I want from an agency standpoint. And then the second you have your brand, it becomes so much more difficult.
That's
my business
so funny.
Partner is a incredible marketer. And we joke all the time that we do not implement our own practices into our business because we just think we know better. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny. We're like, if we put our agency owner hats on, this would be a completely different brand probably. But your question is more relevant now than ever because there are so many other brands in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel that we get to be so strongly rooted in more of this beauty personal care space versus the hyper-functional, more, you know, sports heavy biohacker realm. We call ourselves the most gentle mouth tape on the market. Our shape is a lip shape that is a little bit more, it's a little bit more of a low barrier to entry for someone who just wants to try mouth tape for the first time. And we also have a breathing hole in our mouth tape. So it doesn't cover your entire face. It doesn't literally look like a hand over your face. It's a lot more approachable. And just based on our brand, our packaging, and who Lindsay and I are as founders and users of this product, you know, we want to attract people like us who are not doing cold plunges every single morning. About our wellness, we care about our health. And if we do one thing that helps us in the day to make us feel just a little bit better, it's mouth tape. And so that's what we're trying to be. We're trying to not only really sit in the more, you know, both men and women's beauty personal care, thinking about how is this product impacting not just your energy, but your skin and your oral hygiene and all these things that we care about, but there typically isn't a one-stop shop for other than maybe hydrating and overall sleep. That's really where we're looking to the benefits of mouth tape to play into some of these arenas, but there's a spectrum of brands with any category. And the more that you can find, how are we separating and elevating ourselves? It doesn't mean that we're not interchangeable with those brands. It just means we're staying so strongly rooted in what we know we can hang our hat on and where we have the most opportunity to shine. That's the direction we're going to go. And you still have competitors. You still have, I always say share of wallet, share of stomach, but in this case, it's really share of mouths. And, you know, you're still going to have that. It's good to keep an eye out on what's happening in the landscape, but to stay strongly rooted in how you're positioning yourself and what you want people to know you as, what's your reputation, what are you known for, who are you aligning yourselves with, that's going to end up resonating with that end consumer that you're ultimately trying to get.
You know,
does that answer your question?
It does. No, it's so true. And I wanted to ask you, actually, you mentioned you're kind of like for men and women's like in the kind of more like, you know, beauty and self-care side. Obviously, you know, the beauty and self-care side is a little bit more rooted, and especially you as powerful women business owners yourself and Lindsay, I would assume that maybe your demographic skews a little bit more towards women just based on, you know, the branding that I can see. Have you found that to be true or?
You know, if I'm being completely honest, we launched it as a women forward brand, our first product, and it's like peel behind the curtains. It said beauty sleep strips on the product name, and now it just says 30 sleep strips. And what we found is that really in most categories, women are the purchaser and the end consumer, but men may very well be the end user. So we actually find a 50-50 split on our D2C website, but we know that a lot of women buy it and share it with their husbands or their partners or their friends. And we love that. You know, we still have a lot of work to do in terms of evolving our brand to be really rooted in what we know our opportunity is down the line. But for right now, we don't polarize men by any chance, by any means. And we certainly want to find more ways to show up in a men's kind of ecosystem. And that could be through aligning ourselves with other male-oriented or brands that they are looking to for their own personal care. In fact, we were just talking to a buyer and she was saying that, you know, the men's personal care space really is the opportunity right now because men do care about it. They just haven't had the products and they haven't had the brands that are showing up for them in the way in comparison to how women's brands are. And I think it really is a big opportunity. However, a lot of our other, you know, competitors in the space are pushing so hard in that realm that we have kind of the right to stay a little bit more, I think, skewed towards women, knowing that the product functionality doesn't change. The branding and the connection to the brand might be a little bit more skewed towards women, but you're right. We're a women-owned brand. We're really proud of that. So we know if you put this tape on your husband, your partner, whoever you don't want to be snoring at night, we know that it'll work. It's just who's buying it at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's something that comes up in my conversations with you know, clients and otherwise as well all the time, which is oh, it looks like 75% of our buyers are women. It's like, yeah, but like it's probably not the case that
End
they're all the
user.
ones consuming it all the time. Like that, it's very, very common for that to happen. So I'm glad that like that is something that other people find as well, because it's just a really interesting way that you have to like consider looking at that data, especially when you sell D2C and you have all that great consumer information after you make sales. Yeah,
It's kind
it's so,
of
so interesting.
like kids' products and pet products too. The kids and the pets are not buying your product, but so like who are you really marketing to? So, you know, it's very similar thinking to that.
Yeah, and that's why I was gonna ask you too, in relationship to just kind of like the revenue channels that you operate in with Drift is, I know you said you were talking to a buyer, so assuming you're doing some retail, what's kind of the breakdown between what you're doing like direct to consumer? I don't know if you're on Amazon or, and then also like what's kind of the other side of it with you know, your wholesale sales? What's the kind of breakdown there?
We launched as really a Amazon forward brand because we saw opportunity there. And as we all know very well, Amazon is its own beast. And after being wildly successful on Amazon when we first launched, after the first 8 months, they actually eliminated the category of mouth tape, which we, you know, was a hit at first given how well we were doing. But if we think about it as founders and operators, we were competing against these really low quality brands coming from overseas. We manufacture our products in California. And so they're US made, and we're really proud of that. And that increases our price point. And so to have a quality product that we feel comfortable with people putting over their mouths every single night, it was hard to compete on Amazon, not only from a, you know, what else is in the space standpoint, but also with how much you have to kind of feed the Amazon beast. And so the control is completely out of your hands in that regard. And so while it was a hit at first, it's opened up so much opportunity for us to go really deep in the channels that we know we can perform best in, which is our own D2C. We partner with over 250 experts and influencers that help us tell our story from a PR standpoint. And, you know, they're driving traffic to our D2C store. We've also made a really concerted effort to go down the wholesale route. So being in wellness boutiques, med spas, dental offices, that has been a really strong route for us. And then about 6 months ago, we in Urban Outfitters, Anthropologie, and we just launched in store at Free People. And so we're really cutting our teeth in the retail side of things and really excited to expand that. And that's what we see. I mean, D2C, you can run all day. There doesn't need to be as much infrastructure, but we're really excited for the fact for people to find us in person and for people to discover this and be able to touch it and feel it and understand it and have sampling and demos. This product requires context. This isn't something that people, for the first time that they see it in store, are going to just pick up and buy, unless they've heard about it about five times before somebody's been talking about it. And it's a pretty low, you know, price point that they can try it. We have sample packs that we give out regularly. So the retail environment requires a certain level of kind of just messaging and marketing happening outside of that retail channel, which we believe we've been building up over the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I hear from, you know, CPG brands that I interview that, you know, have been around for 10 to 15 years is post COVID, it's so, so important to just maintain an omni-channel presence. I mean, I think like a lot of people had to learn that the hard way, you know, leading up to COVID, a lot of people had all their eggs in the retail basket and the wholesale basket. And unfortunately, some of those growing brands are the first ones that get cut out when something like COVID happens or some kind of financial crisis, regardless of, like, you know, the rest of everybody else, when that happens to a wholesaler or a retailer, the first ones to go are, you know, the growing players that are probably most dependent on that, you know, those revenue streams. So I think you have a really great nuanced perspective on the different channels that you're operating in and making sure that, you know, you're not having everything on retail or everything in D2C or everything on Amazon. I think it speaks to your obviously your expertise in the industry and what you're doing. So I absolutely love what you're doing. You're super knowledgeable. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, Jess. And I just want to ask one question I always love to ask everybody that comes on the podcast. I usually ask, you know, if you could go back and, you know, start again with your brand, you know, what you would do differently. But I guess in this case, I'm just really more curious, like, if you were to give advice to somebody who's starting out on like a CPG, you know, venture project for the first time, you know, what advice would you give to yourself if you could go back, or to somebody starting out for the first time?
I think my best piece of advice would be do your research more than you think you should. But that also involves talking to people who have been in your shoes, you know, multiple times or in very similar scenarios. I think we all go into it a little blindly, whether that's a service-based business, really any business, right? And we all think we have this great idea. I talk to a lot of founders who, you know, think they have the best product or brand on the market. And I have to bring to them what my findings are and say, have you seen this? Did you know about this? Did you see where things were trending? And I think it's very exciting to be in a vacuum where you think you have the best and brightest thing. And I just can't stress enough how important that initial research is and talking to people and resourcing out information, but also testing and learning, not launching so big so quickly. Lindsay, I will never forget, said to me, I really hated our first packaging. It was a box. I was like on vacation when I approved the design, and I just will forever regret it. But she said, if you're not embarrassed by the first product you're putting out, you're waiting too long to put it out. And I was like, fine, send it to print. And she's right, because as soon as you put it out to the world, you get to iterate, but make sure that you're not so far in that you can't take that feedback and the insights that you gain from real world, you know, validation. So I just think it's really easy to start a brand these days. You can source from just about anywhere. You can have an Instagram, a website in a day. So don't let the low barrier to entry prevent you from really doing your due diligence before you start something.
No, it's so true. And it's such good advice. And to your point, I mean, it's kind of exactly what I'm trying to do with the podcast, is just kind of bring some nuanced perspective to, you know, people who are maybe early on in their entrepreneurial journey, or maybe and even more seasoned entrepreneurs, maybe just off on a CPG venture for the first time, because it's just a whole different business than coming from software or anything like that. So I'm really happy to have you on to be a part of that. I think you offer a ton of great perspectives. So just want to say thank you for your time again, Jess, and just wish you the best of luck, continued success. I love what you guys are doing. And yeah, I really appreciate your time. Be sure to follow up in the near future as well. Look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much. So fun.
Thank you. Thanks, Jess. Thanks, everybody.